Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well and settling into the new year somehow. Wow, it feels like everything is going on, doesn't it? Whatever you're up to, whatever your views, you can't not feel chaotic right now. My guest today is very relevant to everything that's going on at the moment. I'm going to be chatting to Janet Hadley, who's a Sober Club member and also now a Sober Club trained coach. And she's doing the most fantastic work around sobriety in the workplace. And with every single news report that we hear, we're reminded just how important this is. What is this culture that I thought that had kind of gone out of the window in the 80s and 90s, this drinking in the office or drinking after work, or my God, it's I had no idea how rife it all still was. I suppose I haven't been in a sort of regular work environment for a lot of years, but clearly those at the top, it's an intrinsic part of their life, right? It shouldn't be laughing. It's really scary. So we're going to be chatting to Janet about that whole workplace thing and the whole thing about being, you know, sober shamed at work, for God's sake. I mean, this can be hard enough for people who really want to make this change in their life, hard enough with their friends and family without, you know, this constant sort of barrage from work colleagues and even bosses that you got to, you know, be in there with the drinkers in order to fit in. It's absolutely bonkers and just seemingly accepted across every profession. So, looking forward to bringing you that interview with Janet. If training to be a sober coach is something you're interested in, by the way, drop me a message. I realise that there won't be very many of you. But if you do some kind of therapeutic work, or you're a coach or a practitioner, you know, we need more people out there doing this kind of work. So if that's a skill set that you want to add on to what you do, or it's something you'd just like to learn for your personal development, then just drop me a message, drop me a DM, or find me on social media. I'm very easy to find, at Genuinely Grace. I'm also this week delighted to be able to chat to Paul Matthew. He's got such an interesting background. You'll hear all about that. But in addition to being the co-owner of several bars, so he's really at the cutting edge of knowing what's needed in terms of alcohol-free drinks, he is the founder of Everleaf, a really great brand. They call themselves an alcohol-free aperitif. So we're going to be chatting to Paul as well. Just a reminder before we get into those interviews, I got to remind you that our Family Constellations Day is Sunday 23rd. You've probably heard me say it a lot now, but you know, to heal you have to deal and all of that. So if you can make it to Hertfordshire, Sunday 23rd of January, have a look at thesoberclub.com/events. So click on events when you go to thesoberclub.com. And I would absolutely love to welcome you to our Family Constellations Day. It's very difficult to explain and very special. So have a little read of the info and the testimonials. You can always message me if you want more information. So it's Sunday 23rd of January. Our Champneys event was fabulous, by the way. A very small group of us, but just so much transformation there in 2 days. Really just amazing. Absolutely amazing. Getting so many messages on the little group we set up, from people just saying, I can't believe it, you know, for the first time ever, I'm actually waking up feeling a sense of joy and optimism. And wow, it's just so great to be reminded how this changes your life. If you're doing Dry January, by the way, well done you, but don't leave it at January. It's not long enough to really see the changes. Just focus completely on what you're gaining and carry it, play it forward. You know, the stay dry till July thing, that's much more sensible. But just keep focusing on what you're gaining and what's to come, and maybe write a list of benefits that you're hoping to get from being sober. If you're doing any other behaviour change at the moment, maybe you're quitting sugar or whatever it might be for you, the same rules apply. Just focus on what you're gaining, not that agonising thing of what you're not having. And of course, I'm going to say it again, get connected, feeling connected to your like-minded people, to your own kind of soul tribe. It's super important. It's not the same as having a supportive best mate or even a partner who is supporting what you're doing. You need to be alongside people who really get it and who are not judging you. And I really felt the benefit of that this week because I also get a bit vulnerable sometimes, not in terms of triggers, but in terms of, you know, how I'm feeling emotionally. And I had someone who sent me a message that kind of upset me a little bit. And in a moment of vulnerability, I posted that on my own Sober Club on our private group. The support that I got was just unbelievable. You know, we all need a little bit of love bombing sometimes. And that's what, you know, we do in the Sober Club. We're cheerleaders for each other. So find your tribe. It may not be with us. You know, there are loads of groups. There's loads of help available for you. But don't try and do it on your own because then it really does get tough. Let's hear our interview with Janet, Wellbeing in the Workplace.
My guest is Janet Hadley, who is a mum and a piano player. I'm so impressed, Janet. I really am. Also a senior management for one of the UK's top grocery retailers. And now Janet is the founder of Spotlight on Sobriety, which is a business-to-business wellbeing service provider. Welcome, Janet. So lovely to chat to you.
Thank you, Janie.
So I've known you for a little while as a Sober Club member, and also you've trained with me on my Sober Club Coaches program. And it's been so magical to see the work that you've created, because obviously, as so often happens, you've kind of realized from within the work you already do just what a niche there is there and what a need for people to address this massive elephant in the room that is drinking in the workplace. So just tell us a little bit about your background before we get into what you're doing now.
Yeah, sure. So as you say, I've known you for a little while. I've always been a drinker, drank a lot growing up in the sort of hedonistic 90s and all of that, you know, ladette culture of drinking pints and keeping up with the boys and all that sort of thing. And I've always been a big drinker, and it was never really a problem, or I didn't think it was. And it's only really when I got into my kind of mid-40s that I really started to question it. I knew that I was drinking too much. I knew that I was drinking more than the 14 units a week. And I tried so hard to moderate. Honestly, I had all these rules, like so many people. I'll only drink at the weekends. I'll only drink certain drinks.
Exhausting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Exhausting.
And I had no concept of what I now know is grey area drinking. We are all kind of brainwashed to think that there's just two types of drinkers. You know, there's the rock bottom alcoholics and everyone else. And I couldn't understand. It was only really when I found my tribe, which is, you know, your Sober Club, Janie, and listened to your podcast and to some of your podcast guests, that I really understood that I wasn't on my own, and that this is actually a really common problem. And that I didn't have to be a rock bottom alcoholic to stop drinking. I could just stop and enter into this amazing world of sobriety and meet all these amazing people and reap benefits that I had no idea were waiting for me on the other side.
So how long have you been sober now?
18 months now, just
fabulous.
Over.
Yeah, amazing. So tell us about you. You obviously you've got a very full on job. Tell us what you've sort of recognized then, you know, from within the work that you do.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think really held me back was actually the idea of telling people from work that I didn't drink anymore. And I think this is why I ended up stopping during lockdown, because all of that pressure to socialise with people from work and to be part of that kind of in crowd at work had gone, because none of us could go out. So it was a great time to stop. I was really scared of what people would think of me. I was really afraid of what I would now call sober shaming. I'd never heard of it then, but I knew that people would ask me, and actually people did ask me, to be fair. People did say things like, oh, are you still not drinking? You will be drinking by Christmas, though, won't you? Yeah. It won't be the same if you don't get drunk at the Christmas party, Janet. You know, you've got to be drinking by then. And I knew that there'd be all that kind of, go on, can't you just have one? That pressure. And also, there's just a little bit of, if you're not part of that crew who go to the pub, then... Yeah. You don't always kind of
you feel left out.
What's going on? Yeah.
Is it big in your, you know, you work for a grocery retailer? I mean, is there a lot of drinking goes on, a lot of the, of that kind of after work drinks thing, or is it just the same in absolutely any industry?
Honestly, I think it's the same everywhere. I really do. I thought that I worked in quite a boozy industry, but I'm yet to meet anyone who says, "Oh yeah, no one really drinks at my place."
Or yeah, it's true, actually.
You know?
It's true, actually. I used to think it was kind of just... Well, I remember when I did my TEDx talk and the in Norwich, and the guy there was sort of saying, you know, amongst the education profession, professors and stuff, it's like huge. And then, of course, I met a couple of people who worked in the medical profession. Like, oh, my God, it's huge. And obviously I'm in the media. So, oh, my God, it's huge. So yeah. Now we add grocery retailers to the list, right?
Yeah. And suppliers and all the rest of it. I just think it's everywhere. It's the UK, isn't it?
Absolutely. So yeah, you're right, it is a thing. And I sometimes think about, you know, particularly if young people are sort of starting out in the workplace perhaps for the first time, or anybody changing a job, it's very difficult because usually that's the initiation process, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think things are changing, attitudes are changing towards alcohol. So we know that there are more and more young people who are choosing not to drink at all. And obviously we've got a multicultural society where we have, you know, millions of people who don't drink for religious reasons. And it is time for employers to kind of wake up and realize that promoting heavy drinking is not acceptable anymore. It's not acceptable for people to be left out and to feel isolated at work. It's not acceptable for people to be shamed for choosing not to drink. And it's not acceptable to create an environment where people are afraid to tell their work colleagues that they've chosen not to drink.
Exactly. I mean, it's ironic, isn't it? Because obviously, you know, drinking, it causes huge amount of pressure within the workplace, you know, not least the loss to the economy. I mean how many days are lost to drinking, for God's sake?
Well, there's a report by Alcohol Change UK which estimates the number of, well, it's not even measured in hours, it's measured last year. They estimate 167,000 years of working hours to have been lost within a year, which is a pretty impressive number, and which equates to £7 billion
to
the economy. So it's a fairly big issue for employers.
Right. And also, you know, if somebody is, I mean, I'm guessing we're talking about people just having duvet days because they're actually hungover. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, and loss of productivity.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and what I was going to say was, you know, in addition to the fact that, you know, that person's got, you know, having a duvet day, there's often somebody else who's got to take up the slack and run faster. Yeah. So that's a pressure on them. And then they're probably going to get home and drink more because they've had a really stressful day. I'm to do the job of two other colleagues or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Yeah. It's a real problem for employers. And I do feel that there's a big change that's coming in attitudes to alcohol. It's already here, in fact. We know about it in the Sober Club. We're a bit ahead of our time in the Sober Club, aren't we?
That's true. That's true.
There are more people choosing this lifestyle.
Well, absolutely. But for someone listening who, you know, I mean, there may be people listening who have their own business, you know, have their own maybe small business, for example. What would be a great starting point for, you know, a manager or a leader or even just someone who's working in sort of human resources? What would be a good start?
So I think a great place to start is to really understand where your company sits on a kind of sliding scale of the culture of alcohol consumption in your workplace. And I've actually created a model for this, which describes different cultures from a culture where it's encouraged, right through all the different spectrum through to a very progressive company where actually employee well-being is at the forefront of all of the policies and decision making.
Well, it's interesting. Can I just chip in there just for a second, just to interrupt you for a second while I've got that thread. It's really interesting that you say that, because I'm guessing that most companies would say that staff well-being is one of their top priorities. I'm guessing that's in everyone's, you know, manifesto, as it were. But the interesting piece here is that they probably don't include drinking within that.
I agree. It is missing. It is a missing piece of the jigsaw in most well-being programs for employers. So they'll look at financial well-being, they'll look at mental health, they'll look at physical well-being, they'll look at all sorts of different aspects, resilience, that type of training. But there's very, very few companies who actually encourage people to take a look at their drinking or have any real resources in place.
But is it going to be a bit like GPs? They can't really encourage it because they're doing it themselves.
Well, I do think that people, when you're a drinker, as you'll know, Janie, and I was the same, you have a complete blind spot for it.
Of course you do, absolutely. So you don't this know is the problem, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't notice that it's missing from a wellbeing policy because you don't have a problem with drinking, right?
Yeah. Oh, you think you don't. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's so needed, isn't it? You know, a bit of a revamp in this area is so important. Yeah. It really is. So you would recommend then that you know, for a good starting point for managers, human resources, whatever it is within companies, can at the very least recognize that this is a thing and have another look at their wellbeing policy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm setting out to do is to provide business-to-business wellbeing services that will really help their HR and wellbeing professionals to consider a number of different angles that they may not have looked at before within their wellbeing policies with regards to alcohol. So it's not just a lot of companies. If you distill down what they have written down about alcohol policy, it is the punitive measures, what to do if somebody's caught drinking at work, what to do if someone drinks and drives, protecting the employer. And obviously, employers do have a duty of care. That it's actually quite clear in employment law that if somebody says that they have an addiction, that it's treated as an illness, and that they're given confidentiality, and that it's treated sensitively, and people are given appropriate time off. But what actually happens in reality is that people hide alcohol issues from their employer, understandably, and they end up getting fired for different reasons. So for, you know, capability reasons, work performance deteriorates, etc. So they're not getting fired because they've got an alcohol problem.
No,
they're getting fired for other.
This is such a difficult one, though, isn't it? Because you know, I hear what you're saying, but by the same token, you know, not that I've ever really had a real job, but had I have had a real job, you know, 5 years ago, I absolutely was drinking too much, but there's no way on God's earth I'd have gone and told anybody that I had an addiction. I wouldn't even, of course I wouldn't. No. I mean, there's no way. And I mean, in fairness, I also didn't miss any time off because my tolerance was such that I was able to cope with it for then, thank God. But I suppose my point is, you know, there needs to be much more awareness, doesn't there, for companies and businesses, whether small or massive, more awareness around the choices to stop this, you know, so we don't have to park it within the section of, you know, rock bottom drinkers, as we were saying earlier, but they're not 100% fine either.
Exactly. Right? And it's that access to information about the fact that there are grey area drinkers. Imagine if you did have a real job, as you say, Janie, and there was, within the wellbeing programme, you had access to a course that I run called Sunshine Sobriety, which is just quite simply me sharing a little bit of my story, talking about some of the resources that are available out there, including the Sober Club, of course. You know, reading resources. There's some amazing books out there, as we
exactly,
all know.
Perfect. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I'm in. That's exactly.
You know, if you'd have had access to that kind of information in the workplace, you may have got off that boost train.
Because you're right. Because lots of businesses offer well-being, you know, programs of some kind. They offer mindfulness training and all kinds of stuff, don't they? Stuff in nutrition. So how come it's not covered? Perfect. I love the fact that you're doing this. It's great. And then from the perspective of someone, of an employee, you know, if there's someone listening to this and they're in that situation where they're definitely not going to rock up and say, you know, I'm an addict, I need time off, but they genuinely would like some support, what might be the best route for them?
I think it depends on your employer. I'd always say honesty is the best policy. Find someone that you trust within the workplace, and asking for help is, it is always much better to go and ask an employer for help up front before things do become really problematic. Your employer has a duty of care. If you believe that you have, you know, an addiction, they have a duty of care to treat that as an illness and to give you the time off that you need to get your recovery in place. And obviously, I would always advocate seeing your GP as well.
Great. Well, it's fantastic, you know, area that I don't know a lot about, but I'm really, really impressed that you're doing this. I can 100% see the need for it. I really can. You know, I think it's going to fly, the work that you're doing. And obviously, you know, I'd love it if you'd just share how you found working with me on the Sober Club coaching program, because I think I'm right in saying that's what kickstarted this for you.
Absolutely. There is no way I would have launched this business without you, Jamie.
Absolutely. Oh, bless you. I haven't paid her, honestly.
But what an amazing course. So I went into the course thinking that I did train as a Sober Club coach. I went into it thinking that I was going to do one-to-one training, which I feel really well equipped to do as a result of having done the course. I've met some amazing people. It's not just the course content, it's the people who I've met and that support network that you've put in place for us, where we can support each other. But what I was really surprised about was how much content there was that was about running your own business. And some of the speakers that you've had us on Zoom calls with, who've really got me to think about, you know, what is it that I want from my business? What do I want my lifestyle to be like? And the ideas really formed from some of those experts that you've had talking to us. It's quite a different place to where I expected to end up at the end of it, but I'm really happy with it. It's such a comprehensive course. It is not just here's how to coach someone. It's how to run your own business that has been the inspiration for me, actually.
Great. I'm really glad you found that helpful. I mean, I was in two minds whether to put that into my coaching program, but I realized, you know, that's my skill set, and for many people that is the bit that's missing, isn't it? You know, the how do you promote yourself and all of that. I was going to ask you something really important. I've just forgotten what it was. It'll come back to me. So you're still working within in your regular job, as it were. But so presumably, hopefully, you can kickstart this work within your own grocery retailer that you work for. How have they taken this, or are you keeping it completely secret?
Oh no, I've told my boss. So yeah, it's been fine. I think because it's in the wellbeing sphere. As a senior manager, you know, we're all encouraged to look out for the well-being of our own colleagues. And actually, I have done quite a bit of work with our own sort of people team, looking at how we make sure that our workplace is really
fantastic.
We looked at our own policies on bullying and harassment, for example, and thought about how we include sober shaming within that.
There's such a massive link. You hear about bullying in the workplace, and that's a prime example of it, isn't it?
It is. So the Drink Aware report that came out in August 2019 quotes that 1 in 5 people feel that they have been pressured by their boss to drink.
Wow.
Which is quite something, isn't it?
It really is. 20%
of people.
Wow. I mean, even over lockdown, you know, the whole goddamn work Zoom party where you had to have a glass in your hand. I mean, clearly people don't have to put alcohol in, but somehow they felt a pressure to. I mean, even that was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Well,
I mean, this is before we get onto the government and cheese and wine parties. Maybe we shouldn't even go there. I mean, clearly we know what their culture is, right? Let's be clear.
Well, there's a bar inside the Houses of Parliament.
Yeah, exactly.
A free bar.
Heavily subsidised or free, yeah.
Yeah, so...
That's not a good start, is it?
It's really not. I mean... I my personal view, and I think this will become more and more prevalent, is that it's no longer acceptable in this day and age to be actively encouraging alcohol use, borderline alcohol misuse in the workplace. And I'm probably going to sound like a bit of a party pooper, but I honestly think the days of the free bar may be numbered.
Yeah. And the kind of drinks that trolleys that come around on a Friday afternoon, do people still do that? That was there at one place I worked for about 5 minutes. You know, they kind of open the fridge on a Friday afternoon, you know.
There's still some industries where that type of thing is prevalent. Mm. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we know how bad for you alcohol is. You know, I mean, I didn't 5 years ago. I didn't. But now I do. And now that I do, and I know it's the number one most harmful drug, it's actually laughable. It's not laughable. It's not funny, but it's shocking that if you see it as the number one most harmful drug, that it's encouraged and practically coerced in the workplace, isn't it? You have to kind of laugh at how ridiculous it is.
I think what's really sad about it is, I mean, I don't have a problem with people drinking if they choose to drink.
Really, if you've got an off switch and sort yourself out. It's
the fact that for me and for so many other people, it's a factor that holds them back from choosing sobriety. It's the stigma of, it's almost like in the UK, you have to be within a certain bandwidth of drinking. So if you drink too much and you can't take your drink, you get too drunk at the work party, that's not acceptable.
Yeah, you're a disgrace. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you're an alcoholic and you can't control your behaviour, that's no good. But if you don't drink at all, well, that's also got a
complaint. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Why is it only acceptable take a moderate amount of an addictive substance? It doesn't make any sense.
I remember Annie Grace talking about this when I interviewed Annie Grace, and talking about how in her, I think she was working in advertising and marketing, and she was saying that very much back then, it was a case of the women had to keep up with the men. And you really weren't seen as, equivalent in any way, unless you could literally hold your beer the same as the guys. I mean, surely that's changed.
Well, do you know, interestingly, I was chatting to someone yesterday about their experience of drinking in the workplace, and they said something very, very similar, that it was almost as though the men could get as drunk as they wanted to, but the women, they had to drink. But if they drank too much, they were a mess. They were a disgrace. Yeah. And there was a real sexist angle to it, which, you know, I haven't really explored, but it's interesting that you say that.
That's interesting. Yeah. I know what I was going to say to you. I was going to say, isn't it amazing how the incredible things people do, the energy they find to do these amazing things once they ditch the booze. It's just in the sober club, we just see it all the time. I mean, I bet you could never have imagined yourself sitting here having this conversation 2 years ago.
No, do you know, when you got me a text and asked if I wanted to do a podcast, it made my day, because when I was in my early days, I would listen to your guests and I would think, wow, if they can do it, you know, they're so happy in their sobriety. Their lives have changed. They've done amazing things as a result of it. I need to keep going. I need to keep going. Mm. And it really helped me. I cannot believe that I'm now one of them. I cannot believe it.
Brilliant. So exciting. Oh, I love it, Janet. It was so lovely having you part of the course. And I'm so excited to see the stuff that emerges. I think it's really exciting. And I think it'll have a massive ripple effect, you know, you starting this. I really do. So well done you. Do you want to just give us your website then?
Yeah, I just want to say before I do that, Janie, thank you so much for all of the help that you've given me. You have been such a huge influence on my life and so many other people's. Hats off to you for the work you do, Janie.
Oh, thank you. My son who edits the podcast will no doubt edit that out. thank you.
So yeah, you can find my website. It is janethadley.co.uk. And the company name is Spotlight on Sobriety.
Love it. Thank you, Janet. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Janie.
So don't forget, if you are interested in becoming a sober coach, then drop me a message. Our next training, in-person training, first part will be 2 days in person, followed by online stuff, is scheduled for second weekend of March, I think. So drop me a message if that sort of thing is of interest to you, and check out Janet's work. And as promised, I thought it would just be great to chat to somebody who really is at the cutting edge of what's going on in the drinks industry. So let's check out this with Paul Matthew.
My guest is Paul Matthew, who has a very interesting background, conservation biologist and bartender. He's been working in the drinks industry for 25 years, co-owner of The Hyde, amongst other venues, and worked extensively with bars and brands around the world. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to chat to you.
Thanks for letting me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in some of the stuff you've done in the past. Just before we talk about the work that you're doing now and Everleaf, the non-alcoholic aperitif, before we get onto that, just tell us a bit about your background, because I'm really interested in, well, tell us what a conservation biologist even does.
Well, I guess my background is in plants and biology and conservation and the environment. And I spent around 10 years working for conservation charities, mainly looking at how people could sustainably use forest resources and things like that around the world. So I had projects all over the place, really, from the Caribbean through to Vietnam and South Africa, and was great to travel around and see all these incredible places. And there's nothing quite like walking into a natural bit of forest and all the energy and life that there is in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that wouldn't seem like a natural progression into drinks. So how did you morph into the drinks industry?
Well, I started working in bars really when I was studying, and then kind of kept it on as something I enjoyed, and kind of supplemented my charity income when I was working there, and eventually kind of seeing lots of these different drinks in the countries where they come from and how people were making them, and at a time when the drinks industry was growing a lot in the UK. Eventually one thing led to another, and I bought my first bar 15 years ago.
Wow. So you run a whole bunch of bars, or you own a whole bunch of bars. And then what was it led you into the you know, what, tell us about your first sort of foray into the world of alcohol-free and low alcohol drinks.
Sure. Well, I guess, I mean, I think every year we've had the bars, we've seen people's approach to alcohol change a little bit in kind of dribs and drabs, and gradually not drinking has become a lot more acceptable. And it's probably about 5 years ago we noticed a real movement towards lots more customers wanting no and low options that weren't just kind of all the juices in the rail.
Yeah,
or the,
exactly. A fizzy 12, drink 12 or, year old drinks.
Yeah, sparkling mineral water by the gallon. It's kind of people actually wanting something really decent, something that was as good as anything else that they might drink that had alcohol in, and that went along with the food. And you don't go and eat amazing food and expect to be served a kid's drink or something like that.
I mean, that's quite impressive then, that you know as a bar owner, you actually took heed of that early on, because, you know, even now we still find a lot of places that really don't have any perception of this, or at least they're desperate trying to buck the trend and they don't want to sell anything. So what happened then when you decided to create Everleaf? Because this is very much, you know, that it seems to me it really fits that aperitif market, which there isn't very much of, really.
No, I mean, part of that is a naming thing, and I do a lot of work in the spirit side of things, and I judge spirit competitions and study spirits, and so calling them non-alcoholic spirits is kind of, I have a bit of an issue with it. I mean, a lot of brands do it, and I've got nothing against other people doing it, but for me, I kind of wanted to talk about the occasion more than the term spirits. So for me, the aperitif moment is such a good occasion, and it's marking the end of the day of work, or it's something you have while you're cooking dinner, or whilst you're waiting for someone else to cook you dinner. It's kind of it's that wonderful moment, and I think I wanted to try and capture that. It's all about flavor, it's all about enjoyment, it's all about relaxation, and it's all about the ritual as well of making something, and that again, that doesn't have to be alcoholic. So that's why we ended up calling them aperitifs.
Yeah, tell us a bit about the brand then, about what's special about the drink.
Well, it's something that I started off trying to look at all the different parts of it, what makes a good alcoholic drink, and whether that's aroma or texture or flavor and color, and how to build all those in using what I knew of plants. So we use a couple of different plants to give it texture and mouthfeel and body. So that's a big driver of flavor perception in alcoholic drinks. So to address that in non-alcoholic as well, and then looked at flavor profiles I liked, so bittersweet things, and again, bitterness is a great kind of driver of mature perception of flavor. It's not a kid's drink, it's a grown-up drink. It's not sweet, it's bitter, and what plants could then be used for those. So the first stage was really digging things up and drying them and grinding them up and extracting flavors and then testing them out on customers in our bars.
So yeah, what would just run us through some of your flavors then?
Yeah, so we've got three different ones. I guess in increasing order of flavor, there's marine, which is the lightest of them all, but has that kind of fresh, crisp, citrusy note, also a little bit of umami from seaweeds that we use in it. It's kind of bergamot and thyme and seaweed and a bit of olive leaf. And then we have mountain, drawing on kind of mountain flavors and influence. One of the big ones there is Japanese cherry blossom. And then we have rose hips, a little bit of alpine strawberry, lots of other botanicals as well. But that's the kind of, I guess, pink gin or vermouth would be an appropriate comparison point there.
Yeah.
And then finally, we have forest, which is the strongest one, which is more that aperitivo spritz kind of flavor profile, really bittersweet, gentian root for bitterness, a little bit of spice coming from Madagascan vanilla and cassia and cinnamon barks, and then some floral notes from orange blossom and things like vetiver on there to give it character. So
yeah,
complexity in all of these. Hopefully,
and some of these ingredients, I mean, that, you know, wonderful, wonderfully unusual, unique, you know, ingredients. And I'm guessing you, it's very important, particularly with your background, I'm guessing you work hard to make sure you keep that sustainability piece running through. And I'm guessing you have to be quite careful about how you source your ingredients.
Yeah, that is really important to me, that we find the best places we can to get these, and it's something we're always looking at to try and improve.
Yeah, and so it's the idea that we have these, you know, with an artisan tonic, or that we can use them as in a alcohol-free cocktail. What's the best way?
Yeah, I mean, our signature serve with all of them is just with a light tonic, whichever tonics you prefer, whatever you have at home, really. But they also work really well with soda waters, just as a really drier and refreshing complex botanical drink. So really simple to make a great drink, but also if you want to get creative, they do work really well in mixed drinks. So I think for forest, works really well with coffee. So if you're doing a kind of espresso martini style drink, then that's great. Works really well with cold brews. They all have their kind of their things to play around with. A mojito style drink with mint for marine, for example.
Great. So I'm guessing these are available in your bars and hopefully lots of others in due course.
Yeah, I think we're around 500 or 600 different venues across the UK.
That's brilliant.
Now. Just That's everything brilliant. From the Connaught, five-star place in central London, through to Shantley
That's
Spas.
Great. That's great.
Things like The Alchemist.
Are they at Shantley's? Wow, I didn't realize that, because I'm doing retreats at Shantley's. I should have a closer look at the menu. Brilliant.
Have to work something out.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's great. You've been featured on BBC's Saturday Kitchen, haven't you? You had a nice little plug on the telly. That's really good.
Yeah, Ollie's been very kind about us. He's been a great advocate for us. So it's been lovely to see that. And Marks and Spencers have been great in taking us on, and they're doing promotion at the moment for Dry January with us.
Fantastic.
So yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much, Paul. It's great to chat to you. I know you're in Iceland, aren't you? Which sounds tremendously exciting because it's so dull here. It is so dull and wet and miserable. And you've got snow and everything.
Oh, we've got every weather here all the time.
Yeah, I guess you have, yeah.
Gales to snow to earthquakes to lovely weather, but there's all sorts going on.
Thank you so much, Paul. I really appreciate it. We'll point people to websites and all the rest of it. And I think you're doing a really nice competition with us as well. So that's much appreciated. Thanks a lot. Well,
thanks very much.
So we've got a competition to give away some Everleaf. Make sure you check that out. And just a reminder, Family Constellations, we have another Champneys coming up at the end of February if you want a lovely little retreat. That's the next one is at Springs in Leicestershire, and we'll be putting on some more in Tring as well, hopefully. Just make sure you stay connected. If you're doing this, let someone know. Please tell someone. You can tell me. You're very welcome to message me. And whatever else is going on for you, just stay in your lane, right? Stay on your path. Don't get sidetracked and distracted. I did a little podcast interview in the week where I was interviewed. And the guy does this kind of whole storytelling thing and asks you as part of the interviewee, as part of the questions, what distracts you? What takes you off course? Not necessarily in a bad way, but what's always a distraction for you? And I thought it was such an interesting question because we've all got this stuff that, you know, we might be really determined and firing ahead, but then there's a distraction. There's always a distraction. And so if you can kind of pinpoint what that is, you might be on course to knowing how you can actually work with that and make sure that it doesn't trip you up or it doesn't get in the way. Don't get in your own way with this. This is worth doing. I think you heard me say that quite a lot, right? By the way, I meant to also mention that I'm doing a webinar with Dr. Marilyn Glenville on Tuesday the 18th. Just in case you're around for that. If you go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll see the little pic there of Dr. Marilyn Glenville and myself. It's all about supporting the liver. Let's face it, those of us who've been drinking for years, it's very important. But it's not only alcohol. You know, bad food and lifestyle choices can also affect our liver. And the good news is it can heal. But there's a few things we can do to help it along. So if you're interested in that, you can book onto that webinar, online webinar, Tuesday 18th. I think it's 7 p.m. Both of us will be there sharing our tips and knowledge. Marilyn, of course, really massively knowledgeable about liver health. So thesoberclub.com and look at events if you're interested in that on Tuesday. And also, I keep forgetting to remind you that my audiobook's available now. Wow, how long did that take? Happy, Healthy, Sober, Ditch the Booze and Take Control of Your Life is now available as an audiobook. And of course, I'm reading it. Someone said to me the other day, are you reading it yourself? Of course I am. It was absolute agony, I have to tell you. Absolute agony. It took forever. And it's really hard work reading an audiobook, if anyone's ever done it. Every tiny little extraneous noise or every slip up, of course, you have to correct. It's not like doing a podcast where, you know, you hear people practically burping their way through, don't they? No one cares. But it's slightly different on an audiobook. So anyways, that's available now. Have yourself a great week. And, you know where I am. Always connect. Always reach out to whichever tribe feels right for you. Just absolutely stay connected. And, you know about great drinks now. Keep the ritual. Change the ingredients. There's always another way, right? There's always something else you can focus on. And we can actually choose this. We really can. I know it used to feel for me as though I didn't have a choice. I was literally caught in that alcohol trap. It didn't feel as though it was my choice. It felt as if it was something or someone outside of me was forcing me to reach for another drink. No, it's absolute BS. It is your choice. You can take back control. You're in the driving seat, right? If you get in your car and just kind of wally around, you're not going to end up anywhere. You've got to put your direction in the sat nav or know where you're headed, right? So this is worth doing. I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.